Join the conversation at everydaynovelist.com. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find the host at J.D. Sawyer on Minds.com, or hit him up at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you. Support this podcast and keep us going. Go to everydaynovelist.com/support to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer, author of nearly 30 books, more than 30 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, coming to you from up in the crow's nest with my spyglass on this daily voyage through the dicey waters of business, craft, learning, and art in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 818. Today, Kitty asks... By the way, in case you guys are wondering... You did such a good job at sending in a whole bunch of questions for Gail that we actually wound up a few questions short to get us to 1,000. So we're sort of freewheeling it for these next couple episodes. But we will be needing more questions very soon because Gail's episodes will only take us through a couple of weeks. So please do send in questions. This is a very fallow time of year for questions. We tend to run on a very short buffer. So if you've got anything you want to ask, now's the time to do it, because your question will get turned around pretty damn quick.
And why aren't you guys sending questions? We're all stuck at home. You're all stuck at home. You should be writing your next 20 novels while under quarantine.
Yeah, it's hard when the world is going mad, but there's a lot of good centering time that you've got available if you turn off the news.
Oh, right. That's why I'm not writing anything, because I can't stop looking.
Well, the next decade is going to be like this, so if you want to be productive over the next decade, you need to start setting those habits now, because, oh boy, things are going to get worse and weirder for a long time before they get better, and I'm convinced they will get a lot better, but they're going to be crazy for a while. So, with all that in mind, Kitty asks...
One of the projects that you're working on right now is your rewrite and continuation of the Joss Kyle epic.
The Cabra Khan Ascendancy.
The Cabra Khan Ascendancy.
It used to be called the Antithesis Progression.
That's gone through a lot of iterations, and I want to hear you talk about the evolution of them, because I think that would be instructive to people that are taking multiple stabs at something before it works.
Hmm. So just the whole story, huh?
Yeah.
Well, it started when I was 15 years old. I had a friend who had introduced me to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I'd always loved radio dramas, but I'd never heard a radio drama miniseries before. And he was a Brit, he was about 30, 40 years old, who I did yard work for and worked with at the church I was going to, and we got to be sort of geek friends. And... we started thinking, wouldn't it be fun if we could do radio dramas? Well, I had done a lot of, you know, audiobooks for my brothers when they were sick, and my brothers and I always played around with the tape recorder doing fake radio shows and other stuff like that, and so I thought, we could do this, not having any idea at the time what editing meant or how it was done. So he and I started sort of bouncing ideas off of each other, and one of the things that came out of it was a radio drama script that got about half finished, that was sort of a takeoff on Clue, and it was one of the seeds of Down from 10 eventually, though there's a lot of other stuff there that I'm going to be using in a future book or radio drama project. It was called To Mock a Killing Bird, and it was a send-up of every single English country house mystery cozy that I had ever read. No, that he had ever read, and there were a lot of them because we were both huge fans of the genre.
I'm interested in that.
Oh, I'll have to show you the script. It's really, really cheeky. and very, very painfully self-aware. But we got about halfway through that and hit a wall, and I thought, well, if we can't push this off, and by we, I mean he and I would brainstorm, and I would go away and write, and then we'd come back, and we would brainstorm some more. But we kind of hit a wall, because we didn't know where to go with it dramatically. So I started thinking, well, if I can't quite pull off the comedy thing yet, because comedy's hard, maybe I could pull off a drama. And I was a huge fan of Deep Space Nine, and particularly thought it would be really interesting to have a story centered around someone like Quark, who ran a bar and had everything everything happening in his bar, kind of like Casablanca, though I hadn't seen Casablanca yet at the time. I later realized that Quark was kind of based on Rick from Casablanca. But the other thing was that I was a huge fan of the English actor Joss Ackland. I'd first encountered him as the Russian ambassador in Hunt for Red October, and then seen him in Shadowlands and a whole bunch of other things, and thought he was just—he just had this amazing voice and presence, and he had the ability to portray characters that were both noble and incredibly slimy at the same time, and I thought that was a wonderful juxtaposition. So I thought, well, I'll basically steal Joss Ackland's screen presence, and that's why the character is called Joss Kyle. And I wrote out basically a bunch of character dossiers for Joss and for a few other of the characters that made it into the series. And that was where it sat for a while. I didn't know quite what to do with it. I had a setting, I had some characters, didn't really know what to do. Now, a few things that had happened earlier on that didn't come into play till later was that I had a friend growing up whose name was Douglas Reeves, who you'll recognize the name as one of the main characters in the story. He and I were fast friends as a kid when I was a little kid, and we remained pen pals long after I moved away from the neighborhood where I had lived, where we had been neighbors. And one of the things that came out of that pen palship was that he was, at the age of 12, he was a really staunch pro-death penalty guy, as almost everyone anywhere to the right of center, or even to the right of the left, was in the late 80s. It was still the end of the serial killer golden age, and the capital punishment system was not working in a way that most people found satisfying because of the appeals process and other things that most people didn't understand why it was there, including me and him at the time. But he got this notion that if you could somehow ensure that the guilty verdicts were valid, that was the big if, then a great premise for a science fiction story would be if executions were conducted in the courtroom by the judge after the guilty verdict was read. And that way you'd have the co-location of responsibility and power, and there wouldn't be any of this shoving the execution off to the side where you didn't have to deal with the ugliness of it, and there also wouldn't be any of this delayed justice for victims and that sort of thing that was annoying everybody in the 80s. So he had that idea, and he was developing it, but he never wound up going in as a writer. He went another way. I think he became a musician, if I recall correctly. But I always thought that was an interesting idea that could use some play. So that was floating around in the back of my head as well. And then I heard, when I was about 16, I think, I fell in love with Sting, the musician, and the song Shape of My Heart really captured me. The song is basically a character sketch of a very enigmatic poker player who's not interested in the game for the winnings, but is interested in sort of the mystical suspense in the unfolding of the cards. And I found that really captivating. So Shape of My Heart was actually the germ of the original short story that Joss Kyle sprang out of in full-flowered form. And that came together with an idea that I heard someone say as a joke during the technology transfer scandals of the mid-90s, that civil servants should basically be killed when they retired so that they couldn't go and become foreign lobbyists and do technology transfer to potential enemies and that sort of thing. So I got the notion that maybe Joss Kyle, maybe the reason that Joss Kyle eventually becomes this barkeep was because he was an escaped civil servant. He didn't want to become a lobbyist, but he also didn't want to be killed when he retired, so he defects. And then the mysterious card player from Shape of My Heart would be the bounty hunter that's trying to find him. And so what became the first chapter of the podcast Predestination was originally a short story about Joss Kyle making good his escape through facing down this card player. Now, that dovetailed really well with something else in my personal history, which was that I had an uncle who was a diplomat and, as far as the family was concerned, a spy. everyone was convinced he was a spy for the CIA that was using his diplomatic cover to go to the Soviet Union and go to international conferences and collect information. And it's a family legend that still persists that, of course, no one's been able to verify. But I got to meet him a couple of times. And the second time I met him, I was privy to the family legend and also the fact that he wasn't supposed to talk about it, so you weren't supposed to ask. But I was 10 years old and very happy to find ways to violate these norms. So I pigeonholed him at one point and said, "Hey, I hear that you're a diplomat. You work for the State Department and stuff." And he's like, "Yeah, sometimes." And I said, "What do you need to know to be a diplomat? That sounds really fascinating." And he got this look in his eye because he knew what I was asking and trying not to ask. And he said, "Well, have you ever played chess?" And I said, "Yes, I love chess. I've been a chess devotee. I was part of the chess club in high school. I had chess buddies all through my growing up years." I said, "I love chess. It's my favorite game." And he says, "Okay."
You were 10. How did you play chess in high
school? I continued playing chess in high school after I was 10.
Okay.
In my brief high school career. I said, "Yes, I love chess. It's my favorite game." And he said, "Have you ever played poker?" And I said, "No, I never played poker." And he said, "Well, if you know how to play poker and you know how to play chess, you know basically everything you need to know to go into diplomacy." And I thought that was really interesting, but he refused to elaborate. And so the notion of chess and poker being sort of opposite ends of a very complicated mental game stuck with me. And so when it came to bringing Joss Kyle into the mix, I thought that, you know, poker, this was where I was going to get into the poker end of it. And I, because of that conversation, I learned poker and became an avid poker player for several years. So when I got to the end of the short story where Joss Kyle makes good his escape, I passed it around. It was my first long-form short story. It was about 10,000 words, longest thing I'd ever successfully finished. And I passed it around to some friends, and the reaction I got from all of them was, "Why did you stop? The story's not over." And I said, "Okay." So I wrote a second short story where I brought a consummate chess player in the form of the judge character Douglas Reeves, who, of course, was eventually destined to kill people from the bench, into the story as a judge who was also a covert spy catcher who was also trying to find Joss Kyle. And so Adventure 2 was Joss Kyle's dance with Douglas Reeves to try to get free of him. And that turned into a series of three short stories in addition to the first one, at which point my friends all said, "Why don't you just give up and admit that you're writing a novel?" And I said, "Okay." And so
I was one of those.
She was one of those. And so I stuck them together. And as a group, they actually did suggest an ending. And so that's where the first novel came from. That's not the form that was podcast, because I got done with that and realized that there was more to the story. So I started writing book two, and I completely overwrote myself. I was way out of my depth. And the story simply broke. In retrospect, I was also out of my depth on the first story, but I was too dumb to realize it, which is why I was able to finish it. But I came up against something where I knew that I did not know what I needed to know to finish and pay off the story well, so it went to the shelf. And at that point, I was 20 years old, 21?
Something like that, yeah. Such a baby.
Yeah, so this all happened that first year that we were living together, so I would have been 20 years old. So it went onto the shelf, never to be heard from again, until... And I should mention that one of the reasons that I started writing, I had wanted to write my whole life, but I'd never been able to really make the time to do it other than fits and starts. I'd done a couple of fantasy novels and a bunch of short stories that didn't really work. The thing that got me into it seriously was I was working at a courier company as a weekend manager. And the thing about being a weekend manager at a courier company that does most of its business during the week is it's a 40-hour shift over the course of 3 days. So I had a lot of downtime between waiting for drivers to come in and go out and taking care of emergencies. So during that time, I split my time between watching through Babylon 5, which I hadn't done at that point, and writing this novel. Well, the novel got done. I went on to the second one, and it completely broke, and so I put it on the shelf. For years and years, I think till I was 28, and a friend of mine, when I was 28, was actually a kid that I was mentoring, out of nowhere says to me at one point, hey, you wrote a science fiction novel once, didn't you? It had come up in conversation at one point. And I said, yeah. And he said, I want to read it. Because this was now well after the point where I had, and you'll hear about this more in some of the Gale episodes, this was well after the point where I had quit. I had given up writing because I was getting rejections universally. I didn't understand the business, and I figured I was just no good at it. So I'd gone on to doing independent film and other stuff where I could still keep writing, but it wasn't the version of writing that I really cared about, so I could tolerate the setbacks that you get when you're a writer. And so this kid asks me, you know, can I read it? And I said, it's not any good. I mean, it's not very good. You don't want to read this. And he's like, no, I really want to read this. And I said, okay, fine. And I sent it to him. And he read it. And he sent me a note. He said, you know what? You're right. It's not very good. And I said, see, I told you. And he said, yeah, but there's a really interesting story here that deserves to be told. And so I went back and read it. And I hadn't read it in all that time. And I got caught up in the story, even though it wasn't very well written. And so I said, okay, well, how do I do this? I can't just revise what's there. Even at that point, I understood, probably because I'd been doing screenwriting, I understood that the approach most novelists take towards revision is a really good way to kill a story. So I thought, well, a lot of this won't work over the long stretch of the arc that's obviously implied here, partly because a lot of it was written in utter ignorance of a lot of the themes I was dealing with. So I read through and I marked basically 5 or 6 scenes that I really loved and wanted to keep. And then I started from scratch. I printed those scenes out, I kept them on a stack, and I started from scratch, and I started writing the story. And then as I would get to one of those scenes, I'd pull it off the shelf, and I would reflow it into the new story. And that took about 8 months. The original version of the book was about 60,000 words. The new version was 125,000 words, and that's the version that got podcast as Predestination and Other Games of Chance, which you'll find a link to in the show notes. The podcast is very listenable and enjoyable, even though it still displays a lot of early writer problems. So feel free to go listen. And Scott Sigler actually convinced me to podcast it, and because I was feeling very unconfident about how good it was, but I knew that I could do a hell of a job producing it, I decided to go full cast, full production, and that's how I got into full cast audio. So I went from there and I wrote book two, and book two worked really well all the way through. And I was, you know, my confidence was growing. I wrote down from 10 in between, which helped me develop the character chops to tackle book two, which turned out to be 250,000 words. That's what is currently being podcast, though it's at the moment on hiatus. It's coming back. I'm producing it right now as Free Will and Other Compulsions. And then after that, I got halfway through book three and the story broke again. And I couldn't figure it out this time why it broke, and I kept bouncing off it and bouncing off it and bouncing off it. And at one point, about 6 years ago, I guess now, 6 years ago, I was having a long walk with Dean Wesley Smith and M.L. Buckman. We used to walk together when I lived in Lincoln City for 4 or 5 hours a week and talk business and storycraft and such. And I started complaining about my difficulties with this story. And they very indulgently listened to me all the way through. And Dean said, you know what your problem is? And I said, no, what's my problem? He said, you thought that this was a series of books. And I said, it is a series of books. He said, no, this is one story told over multiple volumes. And you published too soon. The reason that you're broken is because there's stuff that you need to go back and put. There's new story stuff that's developed that needs to be seeded early on. And the fact that you can't do it is breaking your ability to go forward because you don't know how much to info dump and retcon. And the real solution is to pull the books from the market, and you're now at the point where you can write this whole story. So you need to pull the books from the market and write the whole story. And I said, okay, that's a good idea. After bitching and moaning for several days about it. You remember that bitching and moaning period very vividly, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And she was no help either because she, as soon as I told her what Dean said, she said, yes, he's exactly right, do it. And I'm like, no, I'm trying to build up my bibliography. But, you know, when it comes to story things, one of my cardinal rules is Kitty wins if she spots something. For reasons that you will have heard in the previous episode where she talks about story development. So, she won. the books got pulled from the market, which allowed me to solve another big problem, which was that I had titled them The Antithesis Progression and given them long, complicated titles like Predestination and Other Games of Chance, all of which is prefaced on my interest in philosophy, which doesn't really translate to a mass audience. Not that a mass audience can't appreciate those things, but the actual terminology is not something that's in common parlance, even though the thematic material and the ideas are. So I was able to find a better set of titles that were more genre appropriate.
And drew the kind of audience that would be interested in the kind of stories that they were.
Right.
Rather than thinking that they were nonfiction philosophy.
Exactly. And also fix the covers. Because the covers were basically art projects that came out of my time as a photographer and a student of Renaissance art. And they were totally not genre appropriate. Back in the 70s, they might have worked, but not now. Tastes have moved on. So they allowed me the latitude to do some covers that were much more genre appropriate in the current market. Now, of course, they haven't published yet because I haven't finished writing them. But I did immediately go back and break book one up at chapter one, wrote a whole book that goes between chapter one and chapter two, and then reflowed from that new continuity all the way through what used to be book one and into book two and to book three. And now I'm working on fixing the continuity in book two, cutting out redundant stuff, and writing books 3, 4, 5, and 6, or what are now books 4, 5, and 6. And that's my project for the coming year. So my goal now is to actually finish those in the next 12 months. But that's how it got to where it is, and how it grew from a short story to what's going to be 6 novels, all of them way over 120,000 words. And all telling a single story. I've already written the ending in large chunks of the final 2 books, and I'm really excited about it because I think I've finally become the writer that can tell the story that I wanted to tell on those initial character and location dossier sheets that I made up when I was 15 years old.
I think a good lesson for this is that if you are a very young writer or a very new writer, and something isn't working, it might just be that it's the wrong length of story for that story.
Or that you haven't grown into the subject yet, which was, both of these were true for me. There's some stories you can only write with a certain amount of mileage under your belt.
Life.
And this was one of those stories.
You had to become old and cynical.
Instead of young and fashionably cynical. Actually, I've become less cynical as I've gotten older, which is creepy. It's like the reverse of most people, but there you go. But that's how I got here. When I finish it, it'll be the end of almost a 30-year quest.
Man, one thing I was hoping that you would touch on was the independent film that never got finished, that sort of made its way into the Cobra Khan Ascendancy, without giving too many spoilers.
Yeah, I forgot about that. So in that interregnum, when I wasn't writing and I was doing screenwriting, one of the projects was an independent film called Hunting Kestrel, which was basically my consolation prize for not being able to do the novels. It was sort of a sideways adaptation of the original draft of Predestination, but instead of centering on Joss Kyle, it centered on the card player. The card player was a woman named Alyssa Hartman, the rest of whose character I pulled from the U2 song Discotheque, which is another amazing character sketch with a lot of fertile ideas in it, about someone who keeps looking in the wrong place to satisfy a deep need in herself. I thought it was a wonderful wonderful fertile ground for a highly dysfunctional character, and so that's where Alyssa Hartman came from. And when we went to do an independent science fiction feature, I wrote a script based on the ideas that I had employed with Alyssa Hartman, but I made a new character, new story, and it was sort of an Indiana Jones type of treasure hunt in space, but it was set in the same world, and using a lot of the same character ideas. I split the character of Alyssa Hartman into 2 characters, one of whom was a mysterious bounty hunter card player and one of whom was a treasure hunter with personal issues. And we shot the whole film but I made a lot of administrative mistakes that made it impossible to finish the film, including a terrible script continuity error that I didn't discover till we were editing the film, that broke the story at the beginning of the third act in a way that was unrecoverable because by that time, all of the actors had moved on to L.A. to further their careers. So, unfortunately, that died on the vine, but the development of the world I did for that story and the story itself both turned out to have a really good place in the Cobra Khan Ascendancy, and they formed the backbone of what's going to be the final volume in the series, what the Lunar Revolution leads to. So that also played into it quite a lot, and the chops I honed in screenwriting, both on that project and on a lot of others, really helped me amp up my game in dialogue and plot flow and tension, which really shows up in Down from 10, particularly. Because Down from 10, I applied all of my screenwriting lessons to it, partly because it started out as a miniseries. But one of the other effects was that doing that independent film solidified the Joss Kyle stories as a cornerstone of an entire universe that was very well fleshed out. And every single book I've written since then, every single science fiction or mystery book, including the Clark Lantham stories, all fit in a timeline that stretches from 2010 to 2750-something.
Or later.
And those include Hadrian's Flight, which is set right smack dab in the middle of the action in the Cobra Khan Ascendancy. It includes Suave Rob, which picks up the story about 200 years later. It includes The Resurrection Junket, which takes place between Suave Rob and the Cobra Khan Ascendancy, and The Wolf of Venus, which now takes place 500-some-odd years after Suave Rob, and Down from 10, of course, which is also in the same continuity, and will have effects in the Cobra Khan Ascendancy that you will see in the final volume, actually. All of those sort of flowed back in, all of those other projects, not just what I learned from them, but what I developed in terms of the world and the timeline and the nature of my fictional universe all flow back in to the Cobra Khan Ascendancy. And in retrospect, what I am going to be doing and what I am doing in that series could never have been possible without doing all that other work.
Wow. I didn't even know all of that.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Particularly the early stuff. I
was going to say, you were there for most of it.
Well, yeah. I didn't know all of the story ideas that went into it at the beginning. I came in at...
Where the Joss Kyle short story was written.
Yeah, with the poker short story. And have seen the development since then. It was the ideas flowing into it that I didn't know all of. I see this a lot with people who grew up reading a lot of epics,
mm-hmm.
whether epic science fiction or epic fantasy or both, is that they try to write an epic starting out,
mm-hmm.
and they just
fail.
And you did that with another project where you tried to write an epic fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this grew organically from a bunch of short stories into an epic, and it didn't start out being an epic,
mm-hmm.
but it turned into one.
So yeah, that's the whole story, or at least everything I can remember at the moment, of how I got into this interesting fictional universe I inhabit.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the question, Kitty.
You're welcome.
And we will see you tomorrow.
The Everyday Novelist is written by J. Daniel Sawyer and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and Kitty Nakian and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2019 J. Daniel Sawyer and the production is copyright 2019 Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners. Join the conversation. Submit a question, leave a comment, or a creative death threat. Or find me at jdsawyeronminds.com or hit me at feedback@jdsawyer.net. We can't do it without you.